The following radio program is for informational purposes only and is neither specific nor tailored financial advice to any individual. It is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase or sale of any financial instrument. Always do your own due diligence and consult a financial advisor before making any investments. Investing involves risk, which can result in the loss of any or all principal. Peter Weitz is a registered investment advisor with Fusion Analytics Investment Partners, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor, as well as a registered rep with Fusion Analytics Securities, LLC, a FINRA-registered broker-dealer and SIPC member. All views expressed in this program are those of the host or guests and do not reflect the opinions of Fusion Analytics Investment Partners nor its affiliates. Your investments. How secure are you that they are secure? Do you want to know more about investing, retirement, and moving to the next level in business? Welcome to In Black and Whites, featuring host Peter Weitz. Our program will answer all of the questions about your future and so much more. It's all about smart business and smarter investing. Now, here is your host, Peter Weitz.
Hi, thanks. Welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Peter Weitz. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio show. Thank you for tuning in last week. We got a lot of positive feedback on our show regarding franchising. A lot of business owners were definitely interested in that. Make sure you tune in to Twitter today. We're going to have some great statistics from our guest in just a few moments. My handle is Peter Weitz. You can also follow me on LinkedIn at peter.weitz or hit our blog at inblackandwhites.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors real briefly, the law firm of Retzel & Andrus, Stephen Douglas & Associates, the executive recruiting firm, and today's special guest, American Century Investments. So without further ado, because we've got a lot to cover today, I want to get into today's program. Joining me today is Diane Gallagher, who's a vice president from American Century Investments in Kansas City, and she works in the Defined Contribution Investment Only Practice Management Group at American Century, and her responsibility is developing comprehensive programs that help improve retirement plan effectiveness and participant outcomes, and we're going to discuss really what that means in a little bit. She really joined American Century in 1995. She came from J.P. Morgan, and she's been involved in retirement plans and educations for the vast majority of her career. Prior to 95, though, she worked as a media relations manager for the Mutual Fund Education Alliance, and she's also worked in corporate communications, particularly marketing for the Sinai Healthcare System in Detroit, Michigan. She has her bachelor's from the University of Detroit. She is well-rounded in many different aspects of retirement planning, and she was recently, in 2007, named one of Kansas City's 40 Under 40 leaders by Ingram's Magazine. So I'd like to welcome Diane Gallagher to today's program. Good morning, Diane.
Good morning, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for being on the program. Diane put together a study, and I want to just give you a quick overview on the study, and then Diane's going to get into the findings of it because it's pretty compelling as we talk about retirement planning and savings. But the primary goal of the study was to understand how pre-retirees view their lifetime efforts to prepare for retirement and gauge their perceptions of how well their employer supported their efforts. So they went ahead in February of last year, in February of 2013, they conducted a survey of 1,054 full-time employed individuals between the ages of 55 and 65 who are currently participating in their employer-sponsored retirement plan. The data was balanced to demographics, being income, gender, and education of all American private sector plan participants between those ages 55 and 65. And the study was done by Matthew Greenwald and Associates. So the findings of the study were compelling. The findings of the study said that pre-retirees have regrets. Their feelings about savings are the strongest. They feel their employers have significant influence over their retirement. The current education programs regarding investments is not meeting their needs, and they don't have a lot of experience. So, Diane, begin by telling me what exactly we start out by saying. People aren't saving enough. What did you find in the study?
What we found is that people have tremendous regret about their saving behavior early on. When we did this study, we really wanted to focus on those individuals at 55 to 65, still working full-time, as you indicated, so they hadn't yet started the transition to retirement, and we wanted them to look back because suddenly the subject is incredibly important. They're within 10 years of starting that process. And what we found is they had tremendous regret about saving throughout their careers, most particularly in the early years of working. And what we found over the course of the discussion was that regret had to do with small choices, not necessarily big decisions on spending. But what they found was that there were little things they did on a daily basis that they would have done differently if they had known the impact it would have had later on. So it's an important perspective that they have that they can share with their younger colleagues, their children, their neighbors, et cetera, that they really do have tremendous regret about saving, so much stronger than anything else related to investing or anything else. It really came down to saving, what went out of my wallet every day.
Yeah, and I know that some of the statistics you've suggested that came from the study said that 80% said they didn't save enough during the first 10 years of employment.
Correct.
And and then today, as a result, you're finding that people are saving 16% to try to catch up. Is that correct?
That's correct. And we really think that they're trying to make up for some lost time. What they basically said was, perhaps I wouldn't have to save 16% of what I make today had I done a little bit more earlier on. And across the spectrum, we ask them why. And anyone who spends any time talking to anyone that you're trying to convince to save, that number one barrier, that number one obstacle to saving is, I don't earn enough. I can't afford to save now. And that was the consistent answer for any time period on why they weren't saving. It's the perception that I can't afford enough. Now, in hindsight, they're saying perhaps I could have. Perhaps I made, if I made different choices, I would be able to do that.
Yeah, and let's focus on that for just a second because, you know, I see some of the statistics here. 57% of the people said not saving enough was one of the biggest mistakes I made in my life. 76% said when I was young, I underestimated how much I would need for retirement. And 82% said I wish I could talk to the younger me and tell myself to save more than I did.
Yes.
And I think that's really powerful. I mean, it's amazing that people don't realize the impact when it's almost too late. I mean, what do you think that relates to with regards to their expectations regarding retirement?
You know, it really resets those expectations. And I think that the sort of traditional visual we have around retirement, if you think about all of the promotional materials you may see in commercials, they have this sort of idyllic image that may not be appropriate for most folks about to face retirement. And what we saw in this study, 88% of pre-retirees, of the folks we talked to, said their standard of living in retirement would be about the same or a little bit worse than what it is today. So that sort of affluent vision may not really resonate with most folks. What they're really hopeful about is that I can at least be able to have the similar standard of living to what I have today. They're not expecting a very sort of lucrative or affluent vision for the future. They're really hoping that I kind of hope I at least have what I have right now. Now, we do have demographic differences there. Folks, obviously, who are on the higher income spectrum, who have higher assets, do expect a bigger standard of living. But overall, that's less than 0.5% who really fall into that category.
And were people disappointed about that?
They were actually a little more pragmatic about it. The folks in this study, again, within 10 years, they're really kind of resetting those expectations. So I don't know if it was as much a disappointment as simply a reality setting in, and what do I do about it now? And in this particular case, we asked a lot of questions about what would you have done differently or what would you recommend other people do? And they're just really settling into, I hope I can maintain the same standard of living that I have right now.
And do you think that they feel that for the ones that feel they can't get to the level they thought, is it too late to save? I mean, we read that statistic earlier that said 16% is being saved today. Is that going to be enough?
I think it's pretty mixed in terms of what their expectations are going forward. There was some concern about, will I be able to maintain my standard of living? Will I be able to cover my living expenses? But they are absolutely trying to make up for it. So which is why we see that higher than average savings rate in that group, that 16%. So they are also looking to their employers for some additional help and guidance on how to make up that difference.
And so, and we're going to get to that later in the show with regards to the employers. The question I had leading into that is, so they rated themselves on how they invested, or how much they saved, I should say. And how did they do?
They actually did not give themselves very high scores. We asked them to actually go ahead and grade yourself, and about one in five said they deserve a D or an F in saving, and strictly putting money away, a D or an F.
And it's funny because if you know you're going to grade yourself for D or an F, still no push to save more, and that I think is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, we asked them to really, you know, to look back, and their regrets around saving were so much more prevalent than any other behavior specifically related to investing. It really kind of overshadowed anything else that we asked them about.
And in any, and do people, I mean, obviously some people probably thought they invested well or they saved enough. Would that, and does that have any, is there an economic difference? Is it based on income level?
There were the folks, again, at that higher end of the spectrum in terms of both income and assets already accumulated, did say they did a little bit better, but we still had a pretty big difference between saving and investing. Generally speaking, one in five, like I said, gave themselves a D or an F, and we had kind of an average of about a C-ish on saving. But when we asked them questions about investing, those scores were actually a little bit higher. Over half gave themselves an A or a B on investing, but at the same time, half of the folks said they didn't really know what they were doing. So we had this interesting discussion or interesting finding where pre-retirees scored themselves lower on saving, gave themselves higher scores on investing, but at the same time admitted, I really wasn't sure what I was doing. And what that translated to was that their regret about not saving enough was so much stronger, it almost didn't matter what they did with what they saved in the first place. So that was a really interesting perspective that came out of this, that I had so much regret about what I didn't save. You know, in the end, it didn't matter where I put it, and that was really the sentiment.
And so when they said that they knew that they didn't know what they were doing, were they just trying to make up for the fact that maybe they didn't save enough?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I think that what we heard was that I put it away, I invested it, but I didn't have enough in the system, in the program, in the process to start with, that it almost didn't matter.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like, you know, obviously a lot of the people, quote, failed or get that D or F score because there were factors, you know, we touched on they didn't make enough, but there's probably other factors in there as well. And, you know, I don't know if fail is the right word, but or maybe that we should just say they didn't save enough.
Didn't save enough.
Yeah, so I really want to focus the vast majority of time on what they feel that if they had the proper toolbox together today that they didn't have back then, how much of an impact that would be. And I think that that's what I want to focus the next segment on. We're going to take a quick break, Diane. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio program on Voice America Business.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Climbing Mount Everest is an amazing feat, and many have died trying to do so. However, more people have died descending Mount Everest than in reaching the summit. Part of the problem may be that people are so focused on reaching their objective that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will do or should be prepared for afterward. Similarly, people are so focused on saving for retirement and reaching retirement that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will encounter once they have actually retired. With one out of every four 65-year-olds today living past the age of 90, you may be retired longer than you are actually working. Have you devised a plan, process, and discipline to ensure that you will not run out of money? If you are not sure what to do, then simply contact Peter Weitz and his retirement team at Fusion Analytics. We help manage human emotions using three proprietary investment techniques. Our job is to evaluate the forces that the typical investor can't see so that wealth is preserved and not lost. Find out more at inblackandwhites.com. Weitz is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. in Black and Whites. We win by not losing.
Stephen Douglas Associates, delivering talent, impacting results. Now celebrating 30 years of bringing top talent to some of the nation's most recognizable companies and private equity firms, whether they need highly qualified executives permanently or on a project basis. Recognized by Inc. magazine as one of the fastest growing companies in America in 2012 and 2013. To learn more, visit us at www.stephendouglas.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to In Black and Whites. To reach Peter Whites or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to peter@inblackandwhites.com. Whites is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. Now, back to this week's program.
Hi, thanks. Welcome back to the show. I am your host, Peter Whites. We are joined today by Vice President of Investments at American Century, Diane Gallagher. And Diane is going through a study that she compiled recently regarding sentiment of pre-retirees and their lack of saving enough money in retirement. And we spent the first part of the show talking about sort of why, how they got there, how the study was compiled, and how did they rate themselves in terms of saving. But I want to spend the next segment, Diane, talking about sort of why they feel that they didn't get done what they needed to do with regards to saving. Where did they fall short? And obviously we can talk about the easy one. They just felt that they didn't have enough money to live on to be able to afford to save.
Exactly. And then we dig a little bit deeper. What we heard from pre-retirees was that I should have paid more attention to what was going out of my wallet with every paycheck. And we asked folks, okay, you're saying that you couldn't afford to save. So let's dig a little deeper. What could you have done differently? And what we heard from people was that I spent some money on incidentals that I should have paid more attention to, things like going out for coffee, going out to lunch, dining out, things like paying more attention to the thermostat in my house and paying more attention to my heating and cooling bill versus wearing a sweater or taking a sweater off. They were simple daily budgeting things that they would have paid much more attention to. And there was no magic in any of that. I mean, people didn't express to us regret about a big family vacation or any sort of larger household expense. They were all related to incidentals, to daily living. And that is a really interesting perspective. And we were surprised at how much regret folks had about that. So there is an important implication there or guidance that can go to other folks about really just keeping track of a spending journal. Pay attention to what you spend on a daily basis, because what they said, had I paid more attention to what I was spending, those little incidentals, I could have found more money to save. And so it is a little bit disheartening to hear from a group of folks who are about to start this transition into a new period of their life saying, I don't have a lot to show for what I sacrificed in savings. It's a cup of coffee here or it's a movie there.
Yeah, and we talk about that. I would venture to say that, and obviously you have the study, but I'd venture to say that most of the people you surveyed probably have never sat down and figured out a monthly budget to show where their money actually goes.
Exactly.
And I think that is part of the problem, is that no one's really factored in a dollar here, a dollar there. But at the end of the day, it adds up.
Exactly. And life gets in the way. It's that whole idea of, at some point your car is going to need work, or you've got a leaky roof, or, your kids have outgrown shoes. There's nothing monumental there, but those are critical daily living expenses you have to take care of. And I think that's what we hear from participants across the age spectrum. Life gets in the way. My immediate financial need always wins over something that's down the road. So helping participants, helping employees while they're still working, get into the habit of paying more attention to what they spend every day helps them put a larger picture together. I mean, we tend to compartmentalize expenses, and what it really comes down to is managing a household budget and including savings as an element in that household budget.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we say here in our office when we talk to people about financial planning is you pay yourself first.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you get your – so when I look at, say, my 401k contribution goes in every week and I have my net pay, since I don't see my contribution into my 401k plan and I just see my net pay, to me it doesn't exist, but yet here I am saving.
Correct. And that really speaks to the power of inertia, and this study supports – all of the academic research around the power of inertia, and exactly that is really the beauty of the 401k plan. If it never hits your wallet, if it never hits your checking account, you really don't miss it. And that is what we heard in this study. Again, the advice or the guidance that pre-retirees would give to their younger colleagues, their younger their kids or people in their lives, the monumental top choices were: save early, save as much as you can, and if you work for an employer that has a match, make sure you at least get the match. And that trumped anything related to any other behavior, anything related to take more risk with your investments, take less risk, rebalance, buy low, sell high. It trumped everything was just to save early, save as much as you can, make sure you get your employer match, save through your plan at work. That won out over any potential behavior, and it really does speak to that power of paying yourself first and how powerful inertia is, that if you just kind of fall into that habit and you don't touch it, you will be in better shape.
And I think it's interesting because we tell people as well when we manage retirement plans to max out the employer match, because essentially it's free money. It's mm-hmm. also a guaranteed return on your investment. If your employer match is 3% and you put away 3%, you've essentially doubled your money with no risk.
Exactly.
But it's interesting because we talk about that, and in your study it appears that there's all this positive attitude towards maxing out retirement plans and inertia, and if I don't see it, it doesn't exist. But yet your study supports that, or your study suggests that the participants in your study felt that their employers were not supportive enough.
Right, specifically related to the support angle. So employers are rated very highly on what I would characterize as the mechanics of offering a plan. So participants across the board, American workers across the board, acknowledge the valuable benefit of a savings plan at work, specifically a 401k plan. Anyone knows when you hear even a young person out of college getting a job, their first job, and they look through their benefits and they tell their parents or their coworkers, oh, it has a 401k plan. I might not know exactly what that is, but I know it's a good thing. People recognize that it is a valuable benefit. So employers are rated fairly highly on what I would call, again, the mechanics, the availability of that plan. Where we see kind of those ratings come down, which is, and the next step, which is, what do I do with it? They know that things are available, tools, calculators are available, but they're not really sure how to do it. And then for this particular group, pre-retirees, and we all know all those things are available, tools, calculator, collateral, meetings, all of that is available. But for this group, perhaps, it is suddenly important to me right now, and maybe it's not available to me at this moment. Suddenly it's important, and I don't know where to go to get it, or I need a password to log on, or there's some other thing that sort of gets in the way. But what they really want, what we heard from a majority of employees in this study, was that the majority said, my employer should require all employees to go to a meeting at least once a year on this subject. They felt much more strongly that they should be required to participate in that sort of discussion. And I from my experience, not all employers require that sort of education on the plan. But it's certainly something that employees are asking for, maybe something that should be considered.
And from some of the statistics in your study, you know, they the highest ratings went to having a good range of investment options and, you know, providing all those tools, but yet providing seminars and webinars on transitioning for retirement or providing webinars, seminars on accumulating for retirement, the employers receive the lowest ratings. And so it almost feels as if they're asking for a benefit that isn't quite available yet.
Exactly. And what we're also seeing, I think that's so interesting when I saw that, when I talk with advisors and I talk with plan sponsors and talk with folks exactly about that rating, people in the retirement industry spend a lot of time on seminars and webinars and discussions about retirement planning. That is a big initiative. There's a lot of effort behind that, and yet it's not viewed as being very valuable to employees. And so the question is, again, is it just not available when I want it to be? Like suddenly today I'm worried about planning for retirement and there isn't a meeting somewhere today. So the question becomes, how do you take something that maybe isn't terribly efficient but is very effective and replicate it?
I want to drill down a little deeper into the retirement piece as we talk about it, because I think, you know, there seems to me to be a pretty good shift in what's going on in the 401k sector that would make sense to maybe get more people saving more money, to get people to have better rates of return, get them more engaged and involved. And I think it centers around target date funds. And for those that don't know what a target date fund is, Diane, can you just briefly describe what it is?
Sure, absolutely. So a target date fund is really managed to a specific point in time at which the investor would need the money. So, for example, if someone is planning to retire in 2025, the idea is a participant would invest in that 2025 fund. It would be the risk would start to decrease a little bit more as you get closer to that target date, with the expectation that I would then start using that money at that point in time, that's when it's available. So the asset mix will adjust over time, stocks, bonds, cash alternatives, over that period of time as you get close to that target date. So what it provides is a diversified investment across asset classes in one solution. And they have become very popular in retirement plans because they are deemed an appropriate default fund for the plan. But for most participants, it provides an efficient way to invest without having to make those asset allocation choices over time and rebalance on your own over time. So it provides the benefit of professional management and diversification in a single selection.
When we get back from the break, we're going to talk about why that's a good idea, how that's actually helping the viewpoint of pre-retirees from the employer's management perspective. And we got a little bit of advice that we're going to give to some of the younger listeners. With that, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio program on Voice America Business.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Stephen Douglas Associates, delivering talent, impacting results. Now celebrating 30 years of bringing top talent to some of the nation's most recognizable companies and private equity firms, whether they need highly qualified executives permanently or on a project basis. Recognized by Inc. magazine as one of the fastest growing companies in America in 2012 and 2013. To learn more, visit us at www.stephendouglas.com.
Climbing Mount Everest is an amazing feat, and many have died trying to do so. However, more people have died descending Mount Everest than in reaching the summit. Part of the problem may be that people are so focused on reaching their objective that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will do or should be prepared for afterward. Similarly, people are so focused on saving for retirement and reaching retirement that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will encounter once they have actually retired. With one out of every four 65-year-olds today living past the age of 90, you may be retired longer than you are actually working. Have you devised a plan, process, and discipline to ensure that you will not run out of money? If you are not sure what to do, then simply contact Peter Weitz and his retirement team at Fusion Analytics. We help manage human emotions using three proprietary investment techniques. Our job is to evaluate the forces that the typical investor can't see so that wealth is preserved and not lost. Find out more at inblackandwhites.com. Weitz is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. In Black and Whites, we win by not losing.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You are listening to In Black and Whites. To reach Peter Weitz or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to peter@inblackandwhites.com. Whites is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email peter@inblackandwhites.com. Now, back to this week's program.
Hi, thanks. Welcome back. We are joined today by Diane Gallagher from American Century Investments. And prior to the break, we were talking about target date funds, and Diane was giving a brief description of what they are. They've only been around for, you know, maybe a dozen or so years, but from my data, they're currently representing about 80% of all dollar flow into 401k plans, meaning that 80 cents of everybody that invests inside of a corporate-sponsored plan are going into target date funds. And Diane, why is that?
Well, the biggest reason is that they are the most commonly used default investment in a 401k plan. So for the majority of 401k plans across the country, if an individual doesn't select their asset allocation on their own, if they don't make choices on their own, their accounts will be invested into typically a target date fund that most closely matches the year in which they would turn 65. So because it is a common default, and we know how powerful inertia is, that for people to take the next step and make a change, that doesn't happen very often. That's not our tendency. That's why really flows are going there, particularly for younger employees who are being defaulted. They're being automatically enrolled into a savings program. That's where their accounts are going.
And so let me frame out why we're talking about this. You know, we spent a little bit of time talking about pre-retirees and how they feel they have not done a good enough job in saving for retirement. But in that study, some of the data supports that a lot of them are just unknowledgeable with regards to what to do with their savings. And that was part A. And part B was they felt that their employers weren't doing enough to help support their growth of savings for retirement. And so target date funds have caused, you know, as you put it, Diane, they've engaged what would otherwise be the disengaged investor.
Correct.
And I'm wondering if you can describe what you mean by that.
Sure. For most people, I think it's an important distinction to make. When we talk about the idea of investing through a 401k plan, in most cases, those individuals are accidental investors. They are people who are taking advantage of an employee benefit, a very valuable employee benefit, that happens to have an investing component to it. So for a long time, we thought that the right decision to do or the right path to go down was try to turn everyone into a sophisticated investor, to teach everybody about investing. But what we've learned over the last couple decades is that for most people, this isn't the subject that they have a lot of passion for. It's not the thing that they get up every day ready to go. Again, life gets in the way, right? They have jobs, they have families. I'm just never going to get to that, getting in the details or understanding investing. So it's not a commentary on whether people are smart enough to do it. It really speaks to that time and attention? Is this the thing I'm going to get engaged in? So when we talk about investing through a 401k plan, it's really sort of happening by accident. So what we have found in the research, the academic research supports over time, is that individuals who make an investing decision at the time that they enroll in a 401k plan, very few of them are going to make changes to that over time. They're not rebalancing appropriately as time goes on. So in some cases, you may have someone who perhaps enrolls in a plan in their 20s and they don't make any allocation changes for many, many years. So they don't look at it. So they've sort of let it just go where it is. And that may be the right solution, but it may not be. So what target date funds are able to do is provide that level of management at the top level of their allocation without an individual having to make specific interventions along the way. So what it really does is provide a structure and a framework for an otherwise disengaged investor to stay on top of their account management over time.
Well, I think that that's an important point to make, because now all of a sudden professional money managers are handling the details of an entire investment allocation over the course of their working career, and it's not sitting stagnant in something that doesn't make sense. And I know from my perspective, you know, I use target date funds in my own retirement, and I'm in the retirement industry. And so I know they make a lot of sense. But there's other things that employers are doing as well. And maybe a lot of it's driven by legislation lately. But what are a couple of the other things that you're seeing that are really impactful that are affecting the outcomes of savers?
Well, the biggest growing trend, and it's prevalent in a majority now of plans, particularly larger plans, is really the use of automatic savings programs. And what that means, there are two elements to an automatic program. First of all is automatic enrollment, and commonly known as kind of a default enrollment. So what an employer does, it assumes on your first day or that you're working or 30 days in, whatever, that you say you will automatically be enrolled in the 401k savings plan unless you tell us otherwise. So as opposed to taking some sort of action or a first step of proactively signing up to save, the employer automatically starts you as a participant in the plan. The most commonly used default number we see is 3%. That is starting to creep up. We have a new research study come in the field right now that'll be out shortly, where we're kind of testing higher numbers to that end, where I'll automatically have that percentage taking out of my paycheck right to start. And what we know, inertia, again, very powerful. If you default people into a certain behavior, they will probably stay on that same course, really taking the lead from things like organ donation. That's probably the most commonly used example outside of financial services, was that if you assume someone is an organ donor and ask them when they get their driver's license to assume they're an organ donor, we have higher organ donation rates. The second part of that is the idea of automatic escalation, and this is incredibly powerful, and the statistics really support this, and that's the idea that we may start you, automatically enroll you at 3%, but every year we're going to creep that up by 1 automatically without you doing anything. So I start my new job, I'm saving 3% my first year. When I hit my first anniversary, I magically start saving 4%, and then next year it's 5%, and that may go all the way up to 10% over the course of a period of time. And what we know is that folks will not go back and drop that number down. If, again, as we talked about earlier, if it never hits your paycheck, you don't miss it. So it's that whole idea of setting up a framework to encourage people to save without taking any proactive step on their own. And that's a really powerful tool that employers have in their toolbox to help.
And have the surveyed participants felt that those employer-sponsored items are helpful, or have they felt that there was a positive effect as a result of, you know, automatic escalation, auto-enrollment, and target date funds?
They absolutely did. And if you think about this study, again, we talked to folks 55 to 65. So a lot of them probably wouldn't have been in the pool of employees who were included in this, because we really saw the jump in using these tools probably over the last 6-7 years. So these folks would have already been in a plan, already saving. And we asked them, we didn't expect anyone to know the definitions of any of those options, but when we explained that to them, we said, how would that have had any sort of impact on your savings? And a majority of folks, 58% of people said automatic enrollment and target date funds would have had a positive impact, would have had an increase on my personal retirement savings. When we asked them about automatic escalation, that idea of 1% each year, an increase, 73% of pre-retirees said that would have had a positive impact. And when you think about the tremendous regret that these folks expressed to us about not saving enough, when we told them, what if you automatically saved a little bit more every year without having to do anything, there was an overwhelmingly positive response to that idea.
Pretty compelling because, again, if it's that whole inertia, you know, that behavioral finance slice that just says that, you know, we here as people just don't feel like doing anything and we take the path of least resistance. And by forcing us to do something without having to do anything, we actually do it. And my question, I guess, is just a different sort of a question is, prior to target date funds, what did they do?
Well, we really saw things kind of a little bit all over the map prior to the Pension Protection Act. We saw in many cases in plans that I had worked on, we saw participants who made allocation decisions right at the moment of enrollment that first day and then not make any adjustments over time. And, you know, you just talked about inertia is really powerful, right? We kind of fall into a pattern. So they took that first step, great for them, of saving, and they made some decision, and then they didn't pay any attention to it over time. I worked on a plan one time that their average age was 54, and we looked back at some transaction history. We looked at what folks had done. By and large, they had made decisions at 30 and had not had any intervention in their accounts over time. That their allocation may have been exactly what those individuals had wanted, but may not have been. And so you had folks who were, again, within 10 years of retirement, they had been saving for a long time, but they were taking a lot of risk with their accounts that may have been appropriate at 30, but may not be at 54. And what we saw was just that again, most folks were disengaged. So they took the first step but didn't follow along. So we really saw things kind of all over the board. And what we're starting to see now is more and more plans kind of falling into that target date space. There are some industry statistics that expect something like 35% of 401k plan assets across the board to be in target date funds because as more plans are using them for their default for automatic enrollment, and more participants are feeling that if I'm not going to take that proactive, that strong level of engagement on my own, perhaps that's a more suitable solution for me.
And that's was kind of my take as well. I'm glad that we talked about that. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Diane, we're going to ask you to outline for us some of the advice that pre-retirees that you interviewed could give to some of the younger savers out there. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio program on Voice America Business.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Climbing Mount Everest is an amazing feat, and many have died trying to do so. However, more people have died descending Mount Everest than in reaching the summit. Part of the problem may be that people are so focused on reaching their objective that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will do or should be prepared for afterward. Similarly, people are so focused on saving for retirement and reaching retirement that they fail to plan appropriately for what they will encounter once they have actually retired. With one out of every four 65-year-olds today living past the age of 90, you may be retired longer than you are actually working. Have you devised a plan, process, and discipline to ensure that you will not run out of money? If you are not sure what to do, then simply contact Peter Weitz and his retirement team at Fusion Analytics. We help manage human emotions positions using three proprietary investment techniques. Our job is to evaluate the forces that the typical investor can't see so that wealth is preserved and not lost. Find out more at inblackandwhites.com. Whites is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email Peter at inblackandwhites.com. In Black and Whites, we win by not losing.
Stephen Douglas Associates, delivering talent, impacting results. Now celebrating 30 years of bringing top talent to some of the nation's most recognizable companies and private equity firms, whether they need highly qualified executives permanently or on a project basis. Recognized by Inc. magazine as one of the fastest growing companies in America in 2012 and 2013. To learn more, visit us at www.stephendouglas.com.
The business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to In Black and Whites. To reach Peter Whites or his guest today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send an email to peter at inblackandwhites.com. Whites is spelled W-E-I-T-Z. Email peter at inblackandwhites.com. Now, back to this week's program.
Hi, thanks. Welcome back. I'm your host, Peter Whites. You're listening to the In Black and Whites radio show. Quick thank you to our sponsors, Retzel & Andrus, the law firm, Stephen Douglas & Associates, and American Century Investments, who I have the pleasure of speaking with Diane Gallagher from American Century today. And we've spent the vast majority of the show talking about a survey she conducted regarding how pre-retirees feel about what they save for retirement. And we spent the better part of the show talking about why they don't think they saved enough, what some of the symptoms of that were, and if they could go back now and do differently what they know now, what they would actually do. And I think it's a good lead into some advice. And the pre-retirees in their survey were asked to, you know, support and give some advice to younger people under the premise of, if I knew what I know now, then what would be the things I would do? And Diane, what were some of the things that they suggested?
Really very strong thoughts around saving. So we had 98% of pre-retirees said they would tell younger workers, save earlier. So as soon as you start working, take advantage of savings opportunities. 97% thought it was important to at least get an employer match. We talked about that earlier, that, you know, to the extent that if you can save 3% and your employer is going to give you another 3% for that, why would you not do that? And again, 95% on save even more than that. So we had really strong feelings about those behaviors being very important or extremely important for a younger person to do. And I think if you know a young person who is just starting their first job, I think the best advice you could give them is to enroll in your plan if you're not automatically enrolled and save as much as you possibly can. Because you get in that habit early, you'll never come out of it. And we all know how valuable time is to that extent. Some of the other things that pre-retirees rated as important to share with younger coworkers was having diversified investments. So again, we talked about target date funds earlier. That's a potential opportunity there. Holding investments for the long term. So they did think it was important not to make quick moves when other things happen. It was interesting. We asked a lot of questions related to investing, a pretty long list, and those were rated, certain behaviors were not rated as being extremely important over the long term. So we said things about taking more risk or taking less risk. Those are about 43% said taking more risk was important. 24% said taking less risk was important. But what we really saw were the highest rated, almost universal approval or opinion came from pre-retirees on anything related to saving. So the biggest advice they could give was to do that. And when we asked pre-retirees to talk about regret, you know, 82% of pre-retirees said they wish they could go back in time and talk to their younger self. So and tell themselves to save more. So since they can't do that, the best thing that they're feeling they can do is to tell the younger people around them, just start saving as soon as you possibly can and keep going.
And that's interesting. The other interesting piece about your data says that 65% wanted to seek more professional mm-hmm. advice from an advisor.
Yes.
You know, when I go out and sit in conference rooms and offer one-on-one support to people inside the plan, it's interesting because I get a very low turnout, even though professional advisors like myself are being there to help suggest the right investment mix. And I think it's interesting to hear pre-retirees wanting to get that word out more because I'd like to see a higher participation rate.
Agreed. And I think there's some perception among folks that maybe their needs aren't as complex, or maybe that's not for me. So, you know, I think a younger person might believe that. So it was interesting to have pre-retirees say, you know, that will help you early on. So take advantage of it if you can. And I think that's what we heard from folks was that, you know, they perhaps didn't seek advice early in their careers. Now they're kind of at a point where they're trying to make up some time. They're trying to make some decisions because they're 10 years out from a transition. They're 10 years out from switching from an accumulation phase to living off what they have accumulated. So the fact that they're looking back and saying to a younger worker, you know, seek advice early, was very interesting and I think very compelling for a younger person to hear.
Yeah, I also, you know, want to touch again on what we talked about before. I mean, 58% said they would wish they paid more attention to everyday expenses such as coffee. Mm-hmm. You know, and I make the argument of if you could remove 2 Starbucks coffees a week, or for those that are Starbucks drinkers, or, you know, maybe 3 Dunkin' Donuts a week from your routine, that $8 or $9 a week could turn into $50,000, $60,000 by the time you retire.
And that is a staggering figure to show people. When people are saying, I can't afford to save, I don't make enough, and then you actually go through the exercise and asking, and this is I think, an interesting aspect or follow-up from this study was ask the employee base, ask people to, you know, keep a spending journal for 30 days, write down, or even one paycheck, just write down every nickel that comes out of that, where it goes. And when you see those numbers and you say, okay, here's an extra, you know, $9, $10 a week, and then you actually do a little calculation and show them exactly what you're saying, $50,000 that could end up, that's a pretty compelling argument. And that's a staggering number for people to see. And it is an easy change. You know, when I look at this discussion around budgeting and keeping a spending journal, it's very similar to diet and exercise. I mean, what does Weight Watchers say? You know, why they're so successful is write down everything you eat for a week and see, you know, could you give up a couple of cookies here and there? Could you give up a few French fries here and there? Of course. And there you make a lifestyle change. And that's what's so compelling about this discussion about paying attention to coffee or bringing my lunch a couple times a week. Those seemingly small expenses could translate into a big lifestyle change for the positive by just making, you know, little steps along the way.
Yeah, and that's really with the crux of the point I wanted you to make, and I'm glad you brought it up. Diane, I can't thank you enough for being on this week's program. These statistics are awesome, and I'm going to be posting the vast majority of these statistics on my blog. Anyone that has any further questions with regards to the survey, please feel free to email me at peter@inblackandwhites.com, and I know Diane will be happy to answer your emails. Next week on the program, I have a really interesting show, and it's going to be geared more towards philanthropy. I have a gentleman by the name of Rich Avezzino on the show, and Rich is the executive director of a nonprofit called Maddie's Fund. And Maddie's Fund was founded by a gentleman named Dave Duffield, the original founder and CEO of a company called PeopleSoft, and now the CEO of a company called Workday. And when Dave was struggling to build his business, the one staple in his life was his dog, Maddie. And when he came home from work wondering if his business software was going to work out or not, his dog didn't care if he had a good day or a bad day. His dog was just happy to see him. And in honor of his dog, Maddie, he created a foundation by which they're going to tell us on the show next week. They believe that by the end of 2015, they will have eliminated all kill shelters in the United States. with regards to dogs and cats. So I think it's going to be a really interesting show. We're going to kind of talk about how business people can really do good in the world through philanthropy. Again, Diane, thank you so much for being on the program. I really appreciate it. This was a great show.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
Great. And everyone, take care. Make sure you get your taxes done today. You only got a few hours left. Stay tuned for a great program next week. You're listening to the In Black and Whites program, radio program on Voice America Business. Make it a great week.
Thank you again for tuning in to In Black and Whites. Please join your host, Peter Whites, again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time and 7 a.m. Pacific Time for another edition of the program on the Voice America Business Channel. Have a safe week.